Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the Ortho Talk Podcast, episode number 28. This week, we are joined by a very special guest and friend of ours, Dr. Hilda Krill. Dr. Krill is currently a pediatric orthopedic surgeon at Temple, Texas, at Scott & White Hospital, and she was actually our chief resident at one point. We did our residencies together, and we do talk about a lot of the stories from residency, catch up a little bit on our lives and what's going on in our practices and how we're adjusting to that, and hopefully some good entertainment for you guys. So give it a listen, and without further ado, Dr. Hilda Krill.
Hey, can we time out? All right, all good dudes, stop what you're doing. This is Time Out. This is the Ortho Talk Podcast. Today we are doing a real conversation with an illustrious guest. Surgeons today are Asif Khalid and Jay Chen. Antibiotics, ANSEF, of course, what do we even ask? Fire risk, high due to lit conversations and explosive topics. Any questions or concerns? Nope. All right, we can go. Incision.
Welcome to the Ortho Talk Podcast. We are episode number 208. All right.
Close.
28, my bad. 28. All right, we've got an awesome guest with us. She was our chief resident for a couple of years. She was an amazing resident to learn from. So welcome aboard, Dr. Hilda Krill.
Hi.
Hey, what's good?
Not much. How are y'all?
Good.
Good.
She gave me, Hilda, do you remember giving me my tour at UTMB?
I always had to give the tours because I had an accent. They gave everyone tours.
Why would they make you give a tour because you have an accent?
Everyone thinks sounds better when you sound foreign. Okay, duh.
It's true. It's part of the reason why I came to UTMB.
That's the Hilton accent, fake South African accent.
Yeah, it's a killer accent. I just love it.
I don't know. I think I give a tour every year, all the time.
You definitely gave it on mine. Did she give it on yours, Jay?
To be honest, like during my interview, I was sick. Like I was just trying to survive. I remember sitting in the corner and trying to look not sick. That's all I did during my whole interview, just sit in the corner and not look sick.
So, how sick were you?
I wasn't like dying. It wasn't like, you know, it was like COVID, but It was just that, like, kind of a cold, and I was like really trying to not show that I had a cold, because you're not supposed to show weakness in orthopedics, and now I don't care anymore. I had a cold, guys, you know. But
do you remember that time you got really sick during residency, and someone like started an IV for you like right before conference?
Yes.
Remember that you were like throwing up and stuff, like in the middle of conference, throwing
that
up.
That is dedication.
Everywhere.
Who did you trust to start the IV?
All right, so. It was one of our co-residents, not on this episode. So it was not myself, and it's not Mo. So guess who it would be?
I don't know how to start.
You got Rob, you got Zubair, you got Pat, and you got Grabani. So which of those four would I trust most to put an IV in myself?
I don't know if Rob's ever done an IV, so I'd probably go with Pat.
Rob was a phlebotomist before he was a doctor.
Little did people know.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
So I was like, Rob, you gotta. I literally couldn't keep food or drink down for like, you know, 30 hours. So I was like, Rob, you gotta spike me an IV so I can make it to work tomorrow before I get yelled at by my attendings. So, and
did you drag
like,
it into conference?
Huh?
Did you drag it into conference?
No. We spiked 1 liter. I ripped it out and I was like, oh, I'm good. Superman.
Then you went and vomited again, right? You vomited like in the middle of conference.
Yeah, that may or may not have happened. I don't remember. I was trying to look not sick. That's all it was.
You should have just taken some Zofran.
I should have. Oh, I tried to get the ER doctor to write me Zofran. He wouldn't do it. So I still remember his name. So I won't say it.
Sure.
I was like, oh, I really need some Zofran. Can you write some for me? He was like, oh, no, man. Well, you can see these consults for me. I was like, oh, great.
Where did you get the IV stuff?
We may or may not have, borrowed it, commandeered. We may or may not have commandeered it from a facility.
Did you return
that
it to the right spot?
I may or may not work for.
Hilda, I think you were already graduated, but there was like a period at the end of our residency where like they people got really mad at us for taking stuff out of the ER, and not like personal stuff, like splint material, like taking plaster, like taking that kind of stuff to the floor to do splints. So we got like this huge giant lecture about stealing and how if any of us were caught taking supplies.
How did they even know?
It's really funny. There's one resident in our class that kept a bag just full of stuff on standby for any given situation.
And, there was, I remember there being an ortho bag with that.
Yeah.
With Goldstein, the PA.
Yeah, there was one of our residents started that, and apparently someone saw it and saw like all the stuff in there, like the Dermabond and the sutures and the plaster and all that stuff, and like ratted that person out. So like we got this whole lecture about how if we were ever caught taking materials, which I mean like we weren't taking it for ourselves. Oh, I know. But then they would they threatened to like fire us and like charge us. They threatened to
suspend our license, and yeah, I mean, but it was for patient care. We weren't taking it out of the hospital. It didn't make any sense, you know.
Wow.
So. Yeah. And then Jay started an IV with stolen materials.
Yeah. Well.
Borrowed materials. No one
knew about that. Thank you, Rob Williams. You're complicit. I just ratted him out. Well, I don't know. Were you guys ever? Who else was ever really sick in residency? Were you guys?
Oh, I had a really bad ear infection, like to the point where the ENTs were like, "Yeah, you might need to be admitted for IV antibiotics."
Holy crap!
When was this?
It was before you guys. It was when I was 3, I think, and I like went to my friend was an ENT, so she debrided my ear in the ER. And then it wasn't getting better. So I like had to go back because it was right before their conference. So I had to like leave Carmichael's clinic, I think, early to go get debrided. It was literally the worst thing I've ever had.
Yeah, that sounds awful. What is an ear debridement?
It's literally the worst pain I've ever had. And I never, ever want it again. Like, I would rather break my arm and have a MS2 reduce my arm over and over and over again than ever debride my ear again.
But did they like numb it at all?
So they didn't at first, because apparently it hurts your eardrum to numb it with lidocaine, except I was hurting so much that they finally numbed it up and it felt so much better.
That sounds like something I would say in the ER. Jay, you remember on Night Float when I stopped numbing people on accident?
Yeah. But it was how do they numb it? Because that's like a cranial nerve. So do they stick a needle in your brain?
It goes into it feels like it goes into the eardrum. I don't know. I'm not an ENT. I know I've had it had done like 3 times. So I had it done as a 3 and then maybe it's a 5 and then as a fellow, I had an IND on my ear too.
Wait, do you have recurrent ear infections?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really bad ones. I've been admitted twice for ear infections.
Doesn't that happen to kids?
Yes, Jay. Thank you. Would you like to talk to my
odontologist about it? And hence you're a pediatric orthopedic surgeon.
There you go. That makes sense. So and then I came back to clinic and there was literally like blood coming out from my ear and it was awful. I should have just known.
Hilda, you were here when I got remember that time I got punched in the face and I showed up to
the conference and you're giant so black eye. And the reps, we had like a mobile lab and the reps were like, yeah, do you know the resident Dr. Khalid? He's kind of scary. I do remember the time you and Comley on our freaking hand rotation both had a herniated disc. And I was like, how did you get a herniated disc on a hand? Neither of you could sit.
Yeah, it's the stools. It was those stupid stools. Like I had poor posture. And I think it was lifting too. But
it really messed up your basketball game for a bit. You're really doing like pirouette layups and just like
I was still trying to play. I should have been playing. Dude, I was walking around Texas Children's. This was like a month or two before I had surgery. I was walking around Texas Children's like on call. I remember where the call room was. Like you had to go down the elevator across the street to the ER. And like that was the most painful walk of my life. Every night I was on call. And like the nurses in the ER were like, they thought I was a patient. They were like, are you okay? Do you need help? Like, are you lost? I'm like, no. I'm okay. I was literally like limping. I was like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Like I was like crouched over, like limping around Texas Children's. It was bad.
I remember I was just the five on hand, and you and Comley, neither of you could move a patient. Neither of you could do anything. I was basically an intern all over again.
You must have thought you had the weakest junior residents in history.
Yeah, we had a lot of back problems. I think like half our, a lot of our program had back problems. Comley still has back problems, I think.
He's always, I think, had stuff. I tore my serratus when I was five.
What?
Tore your serratus?
How'd you do that?
We had a very large lady who needed a revision total hip, and I was walking one of our juniors through it and, you know, leaning for hours over the body who's of a lady who's wider than she is tall. I tore. It really hurt.
Did you get an MRI?
Leffers also did it. Huh?
Did you get like an MRI to confirm it?
No, but I could tell where it was. Oh. And like breathing hurt and moving the arm hurt.
I don't think I've ever had a like a serratus. I didn't know that was a thing. Like serratus.
I Googled it. It actually happens a lot to orthopedic surgeons.
Oh geez.
Oh wow. Jeez. So,
Leffers had the same thing.
Leffers broke a rib too, right?
Leffers, because Sawyer
tackled him, right?
No, it's during basketball. Sawyer just like gave him an elbow right to the rib. It was vicious. Like we're there, we're playing a game. All of a sudden, like Leffers is down the ground, keeled over in like fetal position, and Sawyer's standing over him, like laughing at him and pointing at him.
And Sawyer was like a scrawny little kid. You don't expect it, but he's like
he has pointy elbows. I could see it.
He's very vicious. Like he's very aggressive. He tried something similar to me because I was in that same game. I set a pick on him and caught him like a little blindsided, and he wasn't too happy about that. So like the next minute or the next time down, he just tried to like deck me. But I mean, he's like a scrawny kid. He just kind of like bounced off. I didn't really notice it.
It was really funny. Sawyer's low key secretively probably the most competitive person who doesn't look competitive.
I wouldn't say he's very secretive about it.
Yeah, he looks like a turtle though. I think Nick Vance and you going against each other in post was probably the most intense basketball.
Oh my god, man!
UTMB was beating.
Yeah, he was a bull.
Like, just imagine Vance in the OR and translate that to the basketball court, and that's Vance. That's just Vance. Like, just
maybe that's why
straight on against Mo with his shoulder. It was fun to watch.
So remember, you remember when we used to play against the anesthesia, and it would be like the ortho team versus the anesthesia team, and we would kill them.
We would kill those guys.
Weren't you guys like the champions for like 2 years in a row, with all of our med students who wanted to play?
Yeah, we won a few championships in there. We won a few. We are, I don't know. I think we have 8 or 9 between us and at UTMB.
Really? No. It's like that's like 9 years.
We should have it. We played softball though. Remember softball? We won third place.
No, I didn't play softball.
Yeah, you didn't play. That was like my first. I think I was an intern and we played softball.
I had to play softball. They made me play, and I didn't understand softball rules.
Are you playing cricket? You play
cricket? Why can you not catch the ball with the? Why is the glove not fit properly?
I don't know.
I had to play that. I was forced to play that.
Remember for graduation, Dr. Smith would take us to play golf. That was fun.
Do you guys still do that, right? No?
No. COVID canceled everything last year.
Oh, yeah.
And then our year,
before that, it just didn't
have anything, did we, for graduation?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah. No.
We definitely didn't do golf. But you know why? You remember why? It's because they used to do it in the morning before graduation. And then instead of golf, they added like a lecture. So we had like
we used to have Eggers the same day as graduation. So we'd have like Eggers all day and then graduation.
Eggers was the worst. Eggers was like, oh my God. Eggers was a full day thing like at some point. And it was just a bunch of research presentations and
that's all
one, I guess. I don't know. It was tough. So I try to get out. I try to get out like the last two eggers, and they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me take vacation. You have to.
Apparently, they
Some of us have to. Some of us people in our class got to miss like the last 2 years of eggers.
Wait, how did that happen? I don't remember this.
There was one person in our class that did not go to Eggers for like the last 2 years.
Well, there's one person in your class who also didn't go to Eggers and didn't get their diploma until that person turned in all of his stuff.
Oh, that was a class below us.
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You bleep out the name, but no, it's your class.
Really?
Really?
Corey told me. Corey's like the fountain of gossip. He's the best.
I'm pretty sure it's the class below us.
I'll just text you guys.
Okay. We'll have to confirm this afterwards. I know it wasn't me. Finger on Windows.
So that was also surprising too, because you always get these threats about research projects, and none of us were stupid enough to actually test it out, but
that one did.
Yeah, none of us actually really believed that they would do anything until that.
No, I mean, I don't know why you guys thought that, because Lindsay does not joke around.
Oh yeah, no, Hilda, that's a class below us.
That's a class below us. Yeah.
That's a class below us.
We won't identify my name, but he has a characteristic laugh.
And I know he's not listening to this, but so I can talk about it. But also he is the same guy who for fellowship didn't get his like full license and had to delay the start of his fellowship for like 2 months. Because he got like a teaching license instead of like a full unrestricted license for the state that he's doing his fellowship in. So I think he has to like extend his fellowship by a couple months because he missed the first 2 months of fellowship.
Well, that sucks.
And he didn't get his diploma because he decided not to do his research projects. So,
he finished it eventually, apparently.
Yeah, eventually.
It just goes to show you really don't need to be on top of your stuff, and you can still be an orthopedic surgeon.
That's the lesson
out of all of it. What you cannot do is, beating people up. That's one thing you can't do.
Assault's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
For clarity, it wasn't, and none of us did that. But
none of us did that. No, we're all clean.
No, we're all still practicing
for the most part.
We're all still practicing,
and we haven't gotten caught.
All right. So let's. I want to talk about back to the whole illness and residency thing. When you guys were ill, did you guys feel like it was hard to take time off? Like, so I had some illnesses, and I just really didn't want to take time off. Like that one time.
How many total days have you taken off in residency? Like
for illness or for anything?
For illness, like not vacation, not like education.
No, I've never called in sick in residency.
Yeah. So the only time I did, I was at Texas Children's Hospital, and I had like viral meningitis. Like I was like, listen.
Oh, that's like, hilarious. It shouldn't be funny, but like I'm laughing. What?
Hey, you remember this? Because I was calling kind up, of like your contacts. Vaguely. Do you remember? So I was calling up your contacts, and so basically I was like bed bound for like 5 days. Anytime I stood up, my head would just like spin, and I was like,
"Did you not go to the doctor?"
I didn't do anything for me. They're like, "Oh, here's some like eat some bananas, and here's some like here's a Pedialyte."
Yeah, they act like you're dehydrated.
they wouldn't do anything for me. I was literally bed bound for 5 days, so I took like two or three of those days off from PCH. And the only reason why I felt okay with that is because those like people always put us on like holiday call all the time, so I was like, all right, screw you guys.
I was a fellow, and my resident called me. It was a Super Bowl Sunday, and he called me and he's like, hey Hilda, I'm not gonna be able to come in tomorrow. I'm like, I have food poisoning, I'm really sick. And I was like, okay,
hangover,
good timing. Good timing on a Super Bowl Sunday. Like 3 hours later, I was the sickest I'd ever been. Like I couldn't walk. I couldn't leave the bathroom because I was throwing up the whole time. Jeez. And my friend's like, so you're just not gonna go to work tomorrow? And I was like, it's totally cool. I'll take an Uber. It's not a big deal because I clearly can't drive. And they're like, you're going to go to the hospital when you can't drive, but you think you can safely operate? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. And finally, I took the day, I think I took a day and a half off. And then I went out of town for like a job interview. So I hadn't had a solid meal for like 4 days at that point. Right. And the job interviews, you know, all you're doing is like eating delicious food. And you're like,
yeah,
I really just want soup because I don't know.
I took, I think, like a week after back surgery.
I was like, you had surgery though.
Yeah, that was it. But I was still sick. Wimp. Still sick.
A little wimp there. It took a week back surgery. Actually, that was, you're probably one of the few spine patients I know who actually feels better. So
yeah.
Good on you for having surgery.
I heard you. This feels good. It's a good surgery. Scrape, yeah.
Scrape. Scrape, scrape, scrape. I didn't have it at UTMB. That's why. Just kidding.
You didn't see it. Yeah, I remember you went to. Yeah. I mean, we probably should take more days off. I don't think it was healthy. But
you, what, yeah. what if one of your residents calls you sick? Are you judging them? Obviously not. You can't say yes.
No, yes, I mean, I wouldn't say. Yes.
Hilda, no, this is
my residents go home post call most of the time.
Post call, so. Really? They don't have a night.
Well, they stay in the morning. No, they don't have a night.
So. Yeah, well, I guess when I rotated at Temple, it was like it's pretty long calls. I thought they did have a night float when I was there.
Mm-mm, we don't have a night float.
Oh, no. It was just an intern. It was like an intern that would just spend like part of the day, night with them. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It's pretty busy over there, though. The way
it's set up now is, oh my gosh. My first 6 months here, every night I was on call, I would come in to operate.
Are you taking trauma call?
We take, adult and PD call.
Oh, wow.
And I operated every single night for the first 6 months.
Just stuff came in that needed to be done?
Yeah, open stuff. And it wasn't like I was like, let's keep operating. I'm here. It was like grossly contaminated open fractures. My first surgery was like a Taylor neck that was like 8 hours out and spun 180.
Oh, wow.
And I texted Gino and Corey and I was like, and Newstein. And I was like, so what did you guys do? And they're like, oh, these always close reduce. It did not.
If it's spun 180, it's kind of difficult. So what did you end up doing?
I had to open it and then I put a cob in it and like really turned it. I mean,
around.
Probably destroyed all his vascular.
It was already destroyed. You didn't do it. He did it. Or they did it.
We had a lot of open fractures. Do you know Jill McAngus?
Mm-mm.
She was Conley's year. Yeah, so the year below you guys. She was a med student. Mm-hmm. She was a med student at UTMB. We knew each other, and she came here. And like the combat, Jill McAngus.
Sounds familiar. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So she was a 4 when I was here, and we were like the blackest of black clouds. Like whenever we were together, we operated every time we're together. We didn't just like do one open fracture case. Like there were multiple times I was operating from like 10 p.m. to 4 a.m.
So what do you do if you have a full day the next day? You just run through it, right?
You cry. You take a nap.
I did that at Temple too. Like when I was a student, it's like I would go to my car at 3 a.m. You know, sleep for an hour and then get back in at 4 a.m. and just start the day again. That was a tough rotation, but it was busy because you guys get all that weird Central Texas, like nowhere else to go trauma.
I mean, we're the level 2 PED center. And I mean, I have stuff I do. So I'm on cleanup the next day and I have cleanup most days.
Do you guys still have like a separate children's hospital that was like across the street from the main one?
Yeah.
So you got to go back and forth like that?
Well, I try not to really touch adults unless I have to.
Oh, gotcha. So adults are just big kids.
No. Do you know what? Old people want to tell you all these stories for a really long time versus children really just want their Paw Patrol sticker and then get out. Like I had one patient who just wanted to tell me about his army duty every time. And I'm like, dude, you've told me this like 8 times, like told the nurse this, like, I don't want to know.
Oh, that's funny.
So I only do adults when I'm on call.
So how busy is the PED side?
We're pretty busy for level 2. So my 6 months that I was in my board collection, I had 180 cases.
That's 30 a month. That's 30 a month.
That's a good amount.
And yeah. I was still doing Scully's too, so those were days that it was out.
Oh, those are long days, yeah.
Do you tag team all your Scully's?
I do.
Yeah. It seems like that's just a lot easier. That's what they did at Children's.
There's a lot of data that shows it's faster and safer. But a lot of times, at least before, I have a partner now, but before I had a partner, I would have to tag out to take care of traumas.
Oh, really? In the middle of a Scully? Wow.
So sometimes I do like a elbow at like 6:30, and then if I had like a femur or something, I'd have to do it after, or kind of trying to figure out when I could do it, because I was the only one. You know, I was out here by myself. I was the only Pete's person here.
You were the only Pete's person for a while. Wow.
My first year.
Jeez.
So.
There was a sports guy there that was like an older guy with gray hair. Do you know who I'm talking about? He was really crazy. He called the knife the Vorpal sword every time. You know what I'm talking about? He was really nice. I really liked him.
He's really funny. We did interviews together, and it was really. Yeah. Jay, so how are you? Do you have like prepared interview questions? Jay and I were talking about how to, like, with all the craziness of this year, how to choose applicants.
I really don't have anything prepared right now, and I should, because our interview day is on Monday. What? So
already?
Yeah, like literally.
Does it extend offers?
Yeah, so our first interview day is in a week. So this weekend I'm going to try to like make a list of questions. I really still don't know what to ask. What are you going to ask?
I think I always ask like, what are they the proudest of? What's an example of conflict and how do they get through it? And then I kind of just riff off of like, do I like the kid and like, do I think they're going to work hard around us?
Yeah.
Like, do I want to spend 3 hours with you in the OR?
Yeah. It's so freaking hard to tell, like, especially on Zoom interviews where you have maybe 8 minutes per person. So I don't know. Like, I was going to just, if it were in-person interviews, I was just going to like bring them to the field house and play basketball with them. But I can't really do that.
No, you weren't.
Yeah,
we tried that once, remember?
Yeah, but that's when we were residents, and no one cared about us. So now,
did you guys just leave the interview to go play?
I'm going to force them to be like, oh yeah, this is the interview room. Bring your sneakers.
It's going to be interesting. Mo, Jay, and I had this whole like crisis of like, how do we choose people to interview, like, with so many people that are all like geniuses.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's a genius nowadays.
It's crazy. Like to pick like, I don't know, 64 people to interview out of your hundreds of applicants, you have to exclude people that have perfect applications, except for maybe someone gave them like, you know, very good instead of excellent on like one evaluation. Everyone else is like, is so perfect. So it's really hard. I don't know. I mean, I think I want to figure out if the applicant is going to take pride in their work, you know, if they're going to be a hard worker. But that's what everyone's going to say. No one's going to be on the interview.
Yeah, no one's going to deny it.
I'm not really a hard worker. I'm not really a
team player. Like 8 hours. Is that going to be possible?
Yeah, like no one's going to say that. So I don't know. I may just like flip a coin.
I mean, I make my residents make playlists when they're on my rotation so we can listen to it in the OR.
That's a good idea.
That's nice.
I get tired of like 90s rap all the time, so I sometimes need it.
And country? Do you get a lot of country?
Yeah. No, I have a strict. Really? I mean, it's my room, so it's usually like there's hip hop barbecue sometimes, and then it's mostly like 90s rap music.
No Taylor Swift. Like,
no, our spine guy loves Taylor Swift, and that's all he listens to.
Huh.
I've thankfully grown past that part of my life as of last year.
Of Taylor Swift?
I haven't heard any Taylor Swift this whole year.
I didn't say, what do you guys think of her new album? I like it.
I haven't even heard it. I've grown past her. Like, somehow during Fellowship, I grew up. I'm no longer a teenager. So
you like that other girl? Who's the other one? Camila
Cabello? You think you've grown up? I feel like you've grown up.
I like the humor song. I've grown up past her as well. So now I listen to, I've moved up a little bit. I'm on the Ed Sheeran, so I've moved up a little bit.
Ed Sheeran.
I feel like it's younger though. Ed Sheeran's younger.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Never seen her.
Ed Sheeran. So,
what do you think about asking them like pimp questions or questions? So there's somebody, not it's not a pimp question, but it's like someone in our department gives the app four scenarios, four different consults, and they ask the applicant to categorize them by urgency. You know, just something like that. See if someone can kind of prioritize problems in their mind.
I feel like that probably takes longer to explain the question than the answer. Yeah.
That's like the interview's over by the time.
That's like a good method if you want to spend 5 minutes taking up asking the question.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard. Because ultimately, they're all going to be great.
How much time do you get for your interview?
I think we usually get 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 or something.
We usually tag team it.
There were some interviews that were like 30 minutes long and you just like run out of stuff to talk about. And you're just sitting there awkwardly.
Some are like fine and then some are painful. Like, you like basketball? Tell me. When I have to talk sports, like, you know how if I'm having to talk about sports.
Talk about your softball experience.
I don't know if you guys were there at my graduation. We had like the spine surgeon for the Chicago Bears. Is that a football team?
It is a football
team. That is a football team.
I don't remember that guy.
So, I thought it was a hockey team. The entire time I was talking to the guy. And finally Ryan decided like push me out, like kind of just cut me out of the conversation. It was so embarrassing hearing you talk about ice hockey to this guy. Like, no idea what you were talking about.
So for our graduation, our guy just seemed to show off all of his like fancy toys.
Who was our guy? I don't remember.
He just showed a bunch of slides of all of his stuff that he bought. It was interesting.
Oh, I do vaguely remember that. I remember him like showing his car.
Yeah, he's like, here's my car, here's my other car, here's my house, here's my boat. I'm like, wow.
Have you guys seen Lindsay's cars? He has a good collection of cars. And I know very little about cars.
I've seen, I think, his BMW, that's it. Or maybe his Porsche. I think he has a Porsche too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them as well.
We had a Christmas party at his house 1 year.
They did that I think our intern year. I didn't go, and then they stopped doing it.
So we've gone.
I wanted to go. I remember he used to send us Christmas cards.
Yeah.
And then like one of the last few years, he sent us one with like a llama on it. It was one of the most random cards ever. I had like no idea what. I mean, this is coming from our chairman. It's like,
I remember that. I thought it was sweet. Yeah. I still have it. It's on my refrigerator.
Really?
My chairman here and my chairman before him, both who still works, both of them trained under Lindsay, and they're like all the Lindsay-isms.
Oh, really?
Still, yeah, haven't changed. They're like, does he still say he can see the hospital? I was like, yep.
Oh, do you guys still have there was a PD guy there before, I guess before you, who Souter? Was like, no, Rom?
Rom's, he's a spine guy. He's my boss. He's my chairman.
Spine. Doesn't he remind you of Dave Ingvy? Just like darker hair?
Well, whenever I interviewed for the job, everyone's like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of pauses. And I was like, okay, whatever, used to it.
You're used to that?
It's the same, like, frankly, right? It doesn't even. Yeah. I'm so used to the moments of silence, too, it's fine.
So that was the weirdest residency interview I went to. It was UTMB, not at Temple. But, like, I left that interview just totally, I had no idea what happened to me. Like, because, you know, I had an Ingvy interview, and Ingvy is, you know, this Scully guy who just kind of pauses and then he'll start talking right when you want to talk. And then like I had an interview with Costi, who
he doesn't break eye contact,
the sweetest guy, but just the weirdest conversation because he's such a weird guy. And like, and Carmichael, who was the program director at that point, who would ask you, but we talked about this, Jay, he's super progressive, like beyond his,
oh my gosh, he is so, he is the most super progressive ever.
He standardized interview questions before anyone thought it was cool.
And so he didn't ask how they're trying to get rid of bias and implicit bias in pretty much everything.
He just
so
asked you what your step one score was.
Yeah, yeah. It's the most objective, unbiased
interview on the sheet.
It is unbiased.
No bias.
The same at all.
Three questions
he
for everyone.
Progressive. These are progressive questions.
What are the questions, Jay? What's your step one score? All right.
You got to do the voice too. So it's like, what's your step one? Are you AOA? Do you have publications?
That's it.
That's the entire interview.
It's the whole interview.
I remember we would always be like, it doesn't mean he doesn't like you. That's just how we always ask people questions. Yeah. Don't worry.
Anytime you have to start off like a description of someone with that, you know it's not like, it's not going to go well. Like, you know, it doesn't mean he doesn't like you. Just go with it.
But it's true because he does it to everyone. So it is true. It's a true statement.
Right. And do you remember if you interviewed with Lindsay, everyone would always like kind of warn you that you would be in there for like 15 or 20 minutes and he would ask you a rapid fire 50 questions and get through as many of the 50 questions as he can. And you just had to answer. And they were all just like abstract philosophical questions. Do you
with
remember that?
Classical music.
Yeah, with classical music playing in the background. Of his giant office.
I like those questions.
He asked like a lot of random questions and nothing to do with orthopedics, nothing at all.
Jay, like, there's this New York Times article, I think, that came out, like it was like 52 questions and you will learn everything you need to know about someone.
Maybe that's where you got it from.
Should I look that up like the morning before? Just like
that's what he said before he did it. He said, I'm gonna ask you these questions and I will know everything I need to know about you at the end.
Well, I need the part two to that article about how to interpret the answers.
You need the answer key.
I need the answer key.
That's what you go to your boss for.
Exactly.
He really likes dinosaurs. Where do I go with that?
Dr. Lindsay, these are their answers. Please tell me what came
to you. Say, don't worry, Jay. I got it from here.
Unbelievable.
This is unbelievable.
Jay, so how was the transition for you going back to like where you studied?
It was interesting. Being a new faculty member, I think anywhere, the first day of actual OR is just for me at least, it was super weird. So my first case was not a big case. It was just a washout of some foot, so it wasn't like difficult. I didn't have to like think that much, but it was like, whoa, here I am, like, whoa, I'm the faculty. And then
did Dottie call you Jay, or did she call you Dr. Chen?
She calls me I still don't know what she calls me. I think she calls me Dr. Chen. She calls me Dr.
Honey.
Chen.
Sweetie.
She calls me honey. Yeah, sweetie. Yeah. Yeah, sweetheart. Angel eyes. But it was weird. So, and then for the first, like, I guess the first week before my cases, it was a pretty high level of anxiety because it's like, oh my gosh, it's like my cases. I had like bad trimals. I had like just really dusted fractures my first week. But after that, everything really kind of became pretty normal. And I think the feeling of working under people that trained me, or working with people that trained me, really is, you know, it's been kind of a cool thing because I can ask them questions if I want. And for the most part, they're, you know, we all treat each other like colleagues now. So it hasn't been weird. I think compared to the weirdness of being an attending, you know, that kind of weirdness is minuscule.
What are the residents? So when I first started, my resident with me was a year younger than me, and he kept calling me Dr. Creel, and I was like, dude, you can really just call me Hilda, it's fine.
Dude, I have the same, I have a PGY 5, they gave me a 5, so they're like, I've known these guys for 3 to 4 years, so some of them try to call me, you know, Dr. Chen. So my first resident was Brittany, and me and Brittany hang out. We hang out outside the hospital like a lot, and you know, so we're like friends. So she, just to make it less awkward for everyone in the residency program, I tell them they can either call me Jay or they can call me Emperor Chen. There's no in between. So I'm either Jay or the Emperor who's in charge of everything. So that seems to work.
Calls you Jay, 'cause that would be
no. Everyone calls me Emperor. No one calls me Jay anymore. It's Emperor. So I've given all the residents or some of the residents roles in my kingdom. So Ryan Williams made him the... Yeah, you're missing it. No, you're missing it. Ryan Williams, he's the tax collector. And you remember Bronk? He's the mm-hmm. flag bearer. Brittany's the general. Foreman is the oracle. So they're all getting roles in my kingdom. It's been kind of fun.
Wow, that's an extended.
Yeah.
They just call me Dr. Grimm.
I'm spreading the shared delusion.
I was also the first female faculty member they'd had, so it was.
Are you still the only one, or?
My partner is the other PD lady is also a lady.
Interesting. Yeah, it's been good. So once in a while, I mean, people still call me Dr. Chen, like some other people, and I kind of get tired of correcting them. So I'm just rolling with it still sometimes. I'm like, all right, just call me whatever you want, whatever.
I can't believe you have a whole like made up story and like fictional role play. Like, so do they have to like act in character around you too? Like,
yes, they actually bow down to me when I enter the room. It's amazing. I love it. And when we round, like, I make them carry me on their shoulders around the hospital.
Like, does the tax collector go and like collect snacks from everyone for you and like?
No. The consults, those are the taxes. The consults.
Really like, oh, the consults for the taxes.
Tells yeah. me what to do with the case.
The consults. Emperor. Oh, I made Lily the high priestess.
What does she do? Pray for you?
She prays for my case.
Has it been weird? Todd? What's that?
What is Todd, since Lily's the high priestess?
Oh, he's the chicken coop builder because he builds Lily's chicken coops.
So it's normal.
Somehow they ended up together. It's like a huge scandal within my kingdom. I'm thinking about getting them thrown behind bars, but I like them both enough
that I won't do it. You just need a jailer, right?
Oh, I do need a jailer. So
yep. You have plenty of the TDC dudes to choose from.
Oh, gosh. Can you be a jailer if you're in jail? I don't know.
Well, since what's it's metaphorical, why not?
What's it like with like the residents you don't know?
For me, it's interesting. Like the PGY, the ones and twos, I don't really know most of them, you know, like hardly at all. So for those, it is just kind of like a normal attending resident relationship. They call me Dr. Chen actually, and I haven't really corrected them, you know. So, but I want them just to call me Jay, because I think for most of our careers, we'll be colleagues more than, you know, more than like superiors or supervisors or whatever you want to call it. Emperors, exactly. So I don't know. We'll see how comfortable they are with me, like, as time goes on. But I'm good with Jay. If they want to call me Dr. Chen, I'll stop fighting it as well. Or Emperor.
What does Lindemann do?
He's sports, right?
Yeah. But what does he make people call him?
I don't know. I haven't really.
Probably Dr. Lindemann. Yeah. Speck used to do that. When Speck came back, he made everyone call him Dr. Speck. At work.
Just.
it's kind of weird. Like, you're in the building and they call you doctor, and then the minute you step out, it's like, oh, hey, Fred. You know, it's I don't know.
You shouldn't have to think about it that hard. Just like pick something.
I mean, they'll call me Dr. Creel, and they still, some of them text me when they're done about PD stuff.
So yeah. Your residents call you all your residents call you Dr. Creel mm-hmm. right now. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At meetings, like when my partners talk about me at like a resident meeting, I'm Dr. Creel.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm getting to the point already, 3 months in, where I've kind of stopped caring or thinking about, you know,
it's just a lot more effort.
Yeah. Just call me at this point. Just don't call me Ken Lamb. I've been called that before.
Dude, remember they used to call me Zubair all the time. First of all, can't do that anymore. That's out of the window. But
oh, someone today, she was like, she's our scrub tech. She's like, oh, I heard he was coming back, Dr. Chen. And I thought it was Chris Hsu.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
I was like, oh, that's a common misconception.
No, they didn't. You're full of it.
I was talking to, somehow Chris Hsu and I chatted for a bit, and he was like, how's everything going? And I was like, man, Chris, I'm like a real black cloud when I like got out of practice. And he was like, you've always been a black cloud. Help. And I was like, I don't remember that, but thanks.
So they called me a black cloud here too, but over here being a black cloud, this is being a black cloud where I am. It's getting a septic knee because they've never had a septic knee in like 10 years or doing like a distal femur fracture. Yeah, because it's like a community hospital. So like they just never really.
Dude, you're bringing them to business, man.
Oh, yeah. We did I think I did the first meniscus repair the hospital's ever had today over here. I'm serious. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. I pulled out like the all inside stitch and people are looking at me like I'm a witch doctor. Like, what is this? What's going on? I no shit had like a crowd of people like watching me put this stuff in. And I'm like, it's not that hard. I'm just gonna poke it. But yeah, no, it's weird. So.
You're the emperor, like, up there, man. That's crazy.
I am the emperor. But I'm not gonna call myself emperor and give everyone fictional roles in my kingdom. do you have med students too? Do you give them roles?
Peons.
you can't say that. You're an academic.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Only I can say that.
Everyone has a role. Everyone has a role in the kingdom. No role is more important than any other role.
Dude, I miss med students. Like, I really do.
Really? I am like so far removed from med students right now.
I had one
med student who was coming to help me do like 8 plates. And I like go in through like the whole thing. And he's like, so we're working on the distal femur? And I was like,
uh-huh.
All of that was over your head. Okay, great.
I just like having the hands. Like I had to do a hemi this weekend and I didn't have my PA because he was like at his lake house for Thanksgiving. So like it was just me and the scrub tech. It was tough. But I found a med student in the ER and then like she had never done ortho before. This was her first ortho case. And it was like this like really skinny girl, but I taught her how to dislocate and like reduce the hip and did it perfectly. So I don't know. Like, but then again, you get like the med students, like there was another med student that's like rotating through surgery. And I felt so bad for this guy. He's like my height. I'm like 6'4". He's like my height. And he's standing over there and one of the circulating nurses is like looks at him and is like, you need to change your pants. And you look at him and he's just got like skin tight scrub pants on that are going to like his mid calf. And he's like, no, you can't wear that. You gotta change that. And he's like, huh? What's going on? And then like finally, thank God.
Were they fake?
Huh? No, they were like the hospital pants. You just wore the wrong size. And like,
like why is he wearing such tight pants?
Yeah. And so someone, like a male goes and finds him, like starts taking him to the locker room to get changed. But it turns out like he was trying to wear an extra large, but he accidentally got a large. And like, you know pants like don't fit well at all. Like I have to upsize just to get the right length. So I don't, show like my ankles the whole time. But yeah, that poor guy, he just had like, it was affecting the way he was walking. It looks like he was holding in like, a massive bowel movement in his pants. Poor guy. So I don't know. Sometimes you get that kind of med student too. And I'm sure he's a nice guy. It's just.
I was gonna say at TOH, they didn't even have scrubs in the women's locker room. Like you had to ask someone to get you scrubs so you could
change into them. I remember that. Yeah. I remember hearing that.
I was like, why do you remember that, Jay?
I'm hearing that. No, I've heard that before.
How do you know that?
I'm very in tune with everyone. That's why. One thing that, one thing is when people wear shirts that are too small. It's a no-no.
Yeah, Jay. Tell us about that. Tell us about your
experience. Yeah. Not that I do that or have ever done that. But I like having my students. I love having them around. So now at UTMB, med students can write clinic notes. So it's nice because if I have a resident and a med student, you know, they write pretty much most of my notes for me. I read them and I attest them. But actually, it helps the clinic flow. And hopefully they learn from writing the notes. And then in the OR, it's cool because they're so happy with even small things. Like, you let them put in one screw for like a MS3 and they're just like overjoyed, you know? And it's the cool part of teaching, I think. You know, it's really nice having PGY5s. I love it. I'm used to it now and I can't go back. So it's great because they can help in the really difficult cases.
Are you putting this on the internet so Dr. Lindsay knows? Yeah, I'm putting
this on the internet. I'm not going back. I'm keeping a PGY5. But at the same time, it's like, you know, some of the wow of teaching, you know, obviously they're not going to be wowed that you guys did a case together. You know, they've done thousands of cases by now. But for a med student, they're just like, they're happy with, if you let them hold a knife and make a skin incision for like a screw removal of some super prominent screw that's on its way out anyway, they're like, it makes their year, you know. It's awesome to see. So
we have a 3 and a 4 on our service, and like the early 3s and the late 4s, you're like, yeah, like the 3s are just like excited to put in 8 plates, and the 4s like, great,
yeah,
we have a scoli today, and you're like, these are fun.
Yeah. Exactly. I think so. The nice thing too about being friends with the PGY5 class is, like, I don't know. I remember being a PGY5. You're checked out sometimes if it's not something that's interesting to you, and
sometimes
you're thinking about your boards. Yeah. But, you know, so far all my fives, they know me and they're like at least trying to put forth an effort. So I appreciate that. You know, sometimes I'm like, yeah, nothing's going on today. Just go home, or we have like an easy day today, so just take the rest of the day off or whatever it is. But at least they have some mutual respect since they've known me for a while. It's nice.
How much do you let them do? Like, do you ever get 2 rooms and let them like go in the other room while you're waiting and bounce? Or
I haven't been busy enough to get 2 rooms yet. So I've done, last month I did 25 cases, and the 2 months before that I probably averaged between 15 and 20, but not enough to get 2 rooms. And
is that all foot stuff? Are you doing all foot? That's a lot of cases for foot.
It's not elective foot. It's I get a lot of foot and ankle fractures, and then other stuff that comes in on call. So I've done hemis and nails and those things. But how much, in terms of how much I let them do, I let them do a lot. Like, other than a few pilons that I've done and my first sinus tarsi calc, like I pretty much let them go primary on everything else. So it's been nice. I don't know. I went to a fellowship that was super hands-on, so it's kind of actually nice not having to do all the, you know, the actual cutting once in a while.
You said that after 1 year of cutting,
3 months out, it's really nice.
Dude, what? No, seriously, man. It's
like, I don't know that feeling.
You're not the 3 months.
Dude, after 80 total ankles, it's like, I don't really want to do another anterior approach to the ankle for a while. So I let Brittany do one, and the approach at least. So
it was, you good. You sound like a true academic orthopedist, Jay.
Yeah.
The first total hip I did when I was out, actually was like, Mo, do you have the technique guide? Can you send it to me?
I remember again? That. Yeah. I looked that up this weekend because I haven't done a posterior approach in like years.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it was so like years. You read through and you're like, oh, okay, I remember this. But yeah. At first you're like, ugh.
But once you get going, it kind of like makes a little more sense. Like, you start to remember like what the piriformis looks like. Honestly, I'm seeing the piriformis better now than I ever did in residency. I don't know what I'm doing.
Dude, like, when you're a resident, there's like this pressure of like, you know, needing to make moves. Otherwise, you know, you'll have the knife taken from you or whatever. When you're an attending, there's no pressure. Like, there's no time pressure other than what you generate for yourself. Like, the cases slow down a bit. It's been nice.
Mm-hmm. I think, man, my first year, I think I learned so much more. I feel like fellowship, I learned a lot, but like your first year out of practice, you learn so much more because you're like the only person.
There's a lot you just have to like figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why do you do it this way?
Yeah.
It's what I was taught to do.
Yeah. And you just kind of pick things up as you go.
So how much of what you do, Hilda, is different than what you learned in fellowship?
There's some things just like logistically that I do differently. Because like for a long time it was just me. So I had to just, like, I couldn't see someone every week and check fractures and that kind of thing. My fellowship was huge. So we had a lot of, like, we had like 20 faculty members and they all trained at different places. So you just picked up a little bit from all of them. So I think, I guess I didn't, at least when I first started, I did like 90% Pete's trauma. And now I don't do as much, but I still do a lot more. And when you're in Pete's fellowship, you're not doing Pete's trauma because that's not like, you're doing Pete's deformity and that kind of
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So I just don't remember doing that much trauma and fellowship either.
Yeah.
Do you do any general stuff too, or are you just like strictly peds? Well, I guess you're, I mean, you're at an academic place. You probably have other people, like other subspecialists that take
care of you. Yeah, so I'm division head of peds. So,
whoa. We all have our titles now.
Well, it was a title. It used to be a division of one, and now it's a division of two. So
not emperor, but you know, one day.
So being the only one, did you get to like set up things the way you wanted to at all? Like, how much control did you have over your practice and like your schedule?
Yeah, I pretty much had total control, and it was really overwhelming at first because I had like no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I could decide what I wanted to see. I just had to be there. Like, I could design my own clinics when how I wanted to do my clinics, how many patients I wanted to see. I kind of did a lot what the guy before here did because I didn't know because it was so much autonomy that like I could choose my implants.
Yeah. It's kind of nice though, right? Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at because I'm the only one here. So like,
are you the only ortho?
Yeah.
He's the only ortho they've ever had in their hospital.
No, that's not true. I'm the only one, recent one. Yeah.
Yeah. But, so I was recent too. I mean, there was a guy before me. I mean, he'd left like 6 months before me. So, but they were really trying to
so the hospital here, like they've had a couple private guys that they've tried to get to do cases and stuff, but they're kind of like, you know, they're kind of flaky and they take their cases to their surgery center instead of doing them here. And like, there are a couple guys that they had employed, but older guys that retired or in the process of retiring. So right now it's just me and a PA that's been here for like 10, 15 years. So
did you bring like your surgical cards with you and all that?
I took a lot from fellowship and I said, here, we'll start with this and then we'll like kind of build it as we go. And yeah. Like, I kind of knew what drapes I wanted and like implants I'm still kind of playing around with and seeing what I want. Cause they don't have a lot of like ortho equipment. Like they didn't have a small frag set that they owned. They didn't have, they barely had anything here.
Wow.
So a lot of that stuff, like I had to decide what we're purchasing and like what we actually want to buy. And it's nice cause I'm the only one that's going to use it. So I can get what I want.
I don't feel that strongly about implants, honestly.
Like I don't either. A lot of them are the same. And a lot of that for me is reliability of the rep and just making sure that like it's someone that's going to show up every time and know what he's doing and not screw me over. And you know, like for me, anchors are pretty much just anchors. Like, you know, if there was a better anchor, we'd all use it. So sutures are sutures. Well, actually, that's not true. Jay hates sutures. Huh?
Is it so Arthrex paid you well?
Not yet, but they better. I'm open to sponsorship. So
I wish, you know, so I went traveling for 3 months before I started here. Like I bought a ticket to Thailand and then I took the job and I was like, so I'm not going to be back until the end of September. And they're like, well, we need you like August 1. And I was like,
too bad.
I already have a ticket and I'm not changing it. So I wish I'd had like more. So I had to use a lot of the previous guy's cards, which ended up working well. But there's a lot of stuff that I'm like kind of had to start from scratch. And I wish I'd had better cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a card for everything. So I'm using like carpal tunnels and trigger fingers and stuff. Like I just use the old guy stuff and like I'm trying to change what we, cause I don't need all that kind of, I literally need like three instruments to do a trigger finger. So not rocket science. So I'm trying to change all that, but then like there's some stuff that I'm doing that nobody has done before, so we're here. I mean, so, and it's like, you know, like meniscus repair.
Yeah.
And like nobody really knew, like I had to spend 30-45 minutes like emailing people saying I need these inside, like all inside stitches, you need to buy these inside out kits, because if I need them and we don't have them, we're screwed. I need these outside and stuff. Because there's three different companies. So I talked to the rep. It seriously is. It was one company for my all inside, one company for my inside out, and then one company for my outside in. Well, because that's what we did in fellowship. And I didn't want to like experiment with stuff for my first meniscus repair that I didn't like know how to use, especially with the inside out and the outside in stuff. But I would talk to the reps and I'd tell the people like making my preference cards, like make sure you buy this and make sure this is here in house because I might need it. Luckily I didn't need it, but it was there to make sure. So it takes a lot of time out of your day when you could be like doing other stuff. It's just kind of annoying sometimes. But I don't know. That's a battle you have to go through for flexibility.
I would say, I do have to say, I feel like UTMB prepared me really well to be pretty flexible. Like, so I don't have something like, okay, well,
Definitely.
We have this or this. Like, I can use any of these. It's fine. So
we're getting hit hard with like the COVID stuff here. So a lot of like our drapes are on allocation, and like basically, I found out what that means today because I almost got hosed by it. Basically, like, I don't know why surgical drapes are like this, but there's a big committee or something that hoards all the drapes and they distribute it to the hospitals and they'll look at how much of the drapes you used previously. And that's the amount they'll give you per case, like per month. So it sucks for me because they didn't have a guy here. So for the shoulder drapes, like the drape with the pouch that I like to use is literally just a split with a pouch. We have one in the hospital for the whole month. So I made them find it and I used it today. And I'm like, you guys need to get more of this. Like, find it. I don't care where you find it. Just get it. And I guess the thought is that it keeps people from hoarding drapes. It keeps hospitals from hoarding all the drapes to themselves. But New York is very weird. It's like a different environment out here, like for medicine. Like there's like the nursing union up here is apparently really big. And I was talking to one of my friends is a fellow at Columbia, and she said like the residents over there have to start their own IVs, they have to draw their own labs, put in their own Foley's, they have to do all that kind of stuff.
Because the
nurses union is huge, so it's like a totally different place over here.
That's crazy.
Hilda,
take us through your job search, because I don't know how, how'd you find the job that you have and were you considering other options? And
PT mostly, you mostly do academics for PT, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I wanted to do a little bit of everything. I wanted to stay in Texas. So I wasn't sold. I interviewed at other places outside of Texas, but I guess I didn't have a good reason to move to a new city where I didn't know anyone at all, that was far away from all my family and friends, if I didn't have to. And so then they were looking here and I was like, I wasn't sure. And then my fellowship director knew Rom really well. So they talked to me about it and they're like, well, just interview and see if you like it. So then I interviewed and I liked it. It gave me a lot more freedom than a lot of jobs I would have had starting out. Like I had block time right away. I could pretty much do what I wanted with this job and kind of do what I was interested in, which is great.
It's a cool place. Temple's a cool city.
Yeah.
It's cheap.
It's really cheap.
Close to Austin.
Temple's bigger than Galveston, which I was surprised by.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Do people who work there, do they live close to Austin or do they kind of live around Temple?
So we have to, because we take level on call, we have to be within 30 miles of the hospital.
Gotcha.
But my nurse practitioner lives in Georgetown. And so from my house to downtown Austin, it's an hour door to door. It really isn't bad.
That's pretty good.
That's like going to Houston or the north part of Houston.
It's not. So, and I like that. I didn't have to fight for OR time or fight for cases or anything. Like I started off really busy.
Yeah. I'm in that same boat. It's kind of nice. I'm doing a bunch of carpal tunnels, but whatever. It's cool. I'm getting good at carpal tunnels again.
There you go. If I never have to do a shoulder scope again, it's too soon.
Really?
Oh my God.
They're fun.
I have started doing some MPFLs, and those are fun.
So let me ask you this before we go, because this is something I haven't found a good answer for this. What do you do like on the femoral side with an open growth plate? Because my answer was always just wait. Do you just stay above the growth weight?
Yeah, there's studies that show you stay just above Bloomstat's line.
Just so like a little bit proximal to it. Mm-hmm. And do you do like a suture anchor there or like a bone tunnel?
No, I do a bone tunnel. So I had one, because I usually get the ones that have a bunch of like anaversion and a bunch of valgus. So they don't just get an MPFL, they get everything else.
Do you rotate them too?
That's the full deal.
Are you doing any trochleoplasties?
No. Reeve does. My partner does them.
Really?
Yeah, I'm way too tired. Their growth plates are usually open anyway, so they have to wait.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to save them from that. So that's only sportsy stuff I really do.
That's interesting, though, because I've seen a couple, and my answer was always just like rehab them until the growth plates close. But I mean, if it's a young enough.
So I had a bunch that failed rehab. Like,
yeah, a lot of them do.
And so I was finding then there's a bunch of peds literature you don't have to.
And then my problem is I don't do the other stuff. Like I don't do derotational osteotomies and stuff like that. Cause I've had like,
I'm to expand your scope.
I'm not expanding my scope there. It's like, I'll do the hip scope, but I'm not doing the PAO. Like
I'll do the PAO. I don't want to do the hip scope.
Yeah.
I'll send you my hip scopes. I'll tell you to do the PAO.
I don't do any of that stuff. So.
Yeah.
All right, okay. I've had a bunch of like vertical talus kids too. I mean, Central Texas is weird. We have like a lot of weird stuff. Like we don't have a lot of DDH, but I have like a bunch of kid with Perthes, like 12.
Interesting.
I have one kid with Perthes in fellowship. Now I have 12 limping along.
That's weird.
Vertical talus was like the OIT question I missed every single time. I don't think I've ever gotten, because it's always like hidden to me. I don't know. They always like hide it in some weird thing, or like I just miss it. It's hidden. It's like, oh, wasn't there one question where it was like an oblique talus? Jay, do you remember this?
Yeah. I vaguely remember a question where, yeah, it wasn't vertical. It was like, I remember. Yeah.
I was just bad at the OIT.
Oh, but I do have to say, you know what I've picked up? Weird thing I picked up from residency is I love Dr. Panchbabi's tool. Like they have it in
I told them to buy me one. Yeah.
Residents at my roast, not last year, one of the roasts, they kept joking about how it's my tool and I have to have it. I'm like, it's perfect. It peels
It's up. A great tool. It's the best tool.
It's the best tool. Yeah. I think we should write an editorial for GBGS or something about the tool.
I should email Panchbabi and just let him know. Like I made them buy a bunch because it's so good.
Yeah. I told them to buy me one.
When I have to operate at the adult side, they don't have it.
Sometimes I try to not use it because I don't want to seem like I'm just using it. And then I'm like, fine, give me this tool. Give me Panchbabi's tool. And then it just works so well.
It's so much better than a freer. I bend them all the time.
Molt 9, right? Is that what
it's called? Yeah, Molt 9.
It's a 4.
Molt 4?
Four. That's a 9.
It's a 4. That's right.
Which tool do you have?
Oh, I think you have a different tool.
I'll take a quote and I'll send it to you.
All right. We're going to compare tools and then we'll see. So,
I'm pretty sure it's a Molt number 4 because I looked at the catalog because I ordered them for me.
All right. I'm going to ask the man himself tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll get to the bottom of the
report back to us.
I don't think Punch will know. I think it's going to even have Dottie.
Then for sure, we'll never know. Have I didn't say that. All right. So the last question we ask every guest, what's your favorite bone?
I'm gonna go with. I like the tibia. The tibia tubercle is good.
Nice. Finally, someone with something new. I don't think anyone said tibia before.
No, it's definitely not a Molt 4. Molt 4 is like a curette.
I do like a pediatric elbow. Obviously.
Molt 4 is like a curette.
Maybe the Molt 4. It's the PD version of the tool.
Maybe. No, I'm gonna Google it now.
It's definitely a Molt 9.
All right. It's a Molt 9. Y'all have fun Googling.
It's a Molt 9.
Thanks for joining us, Hilda.
All right. Thanks.
Bye, guys.
All right, bye. See ya.
And that'll do it for this week. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. If you want to catch any of our other episodes, you can do so at our website, orthotalkpod.com. If you want to, the easiest way to do it is on Twitter. You can follow us and message us at orthotalkpod, or you can send us an email, theorthopodcast@gmail.com. If you want to catch the video of this episode or any of our other episodes, you can go to our YouTube channel, the Ortho Talk Podcast on YouTube. I hope you guys are enjoying what we're doing. We'll have more for you next week. And thank you guys for the opportunity.